How many of you know who George Barna is? Just a few. George Barna is well known as a researcher in the area of churches and trends among churches and religion in America. His entire organization, which is founded in Southern California, is based upon doing research among church organizations and ministers and people to find out what are the trends in religion and in churches. Recently, George Barna, it's called the Barna Research Group, interviewed 3,000 teenagers across the United States. And he puts out a weekly report on his surveys, the results of them, to help keep church pastors and religious leaders up to date and those who work with young people on the feelings and attitudes and the things going on in the hearts and minds of young people. He says this week's report is about the 22 million young people between the ages of 13 and 18 in our country. They have an amazing impact on the shaping of American culture, religious movements, and family vitality. 22 million of them. So we've got a few of you here today. New research from the Barna Research Group located in Ventura, California, suggests that the common wisdom about teenagers is now passé, out of date. A whole new set of perspectives and behaviors characterizes today's teens. Things have changed dramatically in the teen world since the mid-90s. Today's teenagers, now dominated by what is called the Mosaic Generation. Anyone heard of the Mosaic Generation? We've heard of the baby boomers and this and that. This is now a term being used of the young people called the Mosaic Generation. In a nutshell, mosaics are youth looking for an authentic experience with God and with other people. So if you hear the term mosaics, it's young people looking for an authentic experience with God and with other people. Today's teenagers, now dominated by the Mosaic Generation, are more likely to state that they are satisfied with their life, they look forward to a challenging future, they feel that they are intelligent and attractive, and that they can optimistically face tomorrow because they trust most other people. A majority of teenagers have given up on the anxieties related to abandonment. Teens today more typically feel secure about their life and their future. Now, he goes on to add that while there still are millions of teenagers who are struggling to find their place in the world, the prevailing mood, though, among the majority of teens today has shifted in the past half decade to a more upbeat, optimistic, and self-reliant perspective. A positive shift is taking place among the young people of our country. Although more than 4 out of 5 teenagers believe that adults see young people in a negative light, well, you adults here, how do you see young people and teenagers? In the interviews, most young people, 4 out of 5 of them, believe that most adults see most young people in a negative light. But despite that, it has not deterred these young people from pursuing their dreams of a good life. The most common future desires of teens include a quality education, more and more young people seeking a quality education, good health, intimate personal relationships, and of course they want a comfortable lifestyle. A major change in attitude is the shift from feeling ill-equipped for the future. Of course, we go back and remember more what we called our hippie generation back in my time. But today's young people, more are facing the future. And it says there is a shift in attitudes from away from feeling ill-equipped for the future or harboring anger or self-pity. That was the norm a decade ago among youth across the nation. But a change is taking place to the current perspective of youth addressing their lack of preparation by aggressively seeking the resources, the education, and the experiences they need to have a successful life. So what he writes is that there is a positive change taking place among young people in our nation. And I think we observe that clearly in our church youth. Let me read on. This gets into now talking about teenagers and God and churches and their beliefs. Teenagers patronize churches and other event-oriented organizations because they are seeking a compelling experience that is made complete and safe by the presence of people they know and trust and from whom they are willing to learn and take their cues. And listen to this. I wouldn't have expected this among young people. It says music and other ambient factors may attract them once or twice, but those elements will not keep them coming back for more. So many think that it's primarily the music, and in his interviews, he says, no, they like the music, but it's not the primary thing they're after. There has to be sufficient substance, quality, hope, and genuine mutual concern and acceptance in order for them to return to church on a regular basis. Young people today need an outlet for their desire to have a positive effect on the world and to synchronize their inner drive to be needed with the needs of those in the world that have much less than they do. Despite their streetwise attitudes, teenagers have a genuine streak of compassion that influences their life. Churches that provide a conduit for serving the community in which they live will create more meaningful bonds with the Mosaic generation. And that is the generation of teens looking for an authentic experience with God and with other people. I just got that here this week off the webpage, so it's his latest report that is from George Barna. And following on with that report, most of you are familiar with Parade magazine every Sunday. You know, Parade magazine, and they cover excellent articles in Parade magazine, every Sunday edition of the paper. My wife and I always love looking at Parade because they choose to pick the stories of real people's lives, and usually they're people who've had great handicaps and great problems in their lives and how they've been overcomers in life. In April 21st, Parade magazine, it was about the events of September 11th in our country. It says, after September the 11th, the outlook for our nation's youth could have been bleak. Instead, young people have led the way toward a better America with an incredible wave of volunteerism in America. They're volunteering more than any other group of people, including adults, to help America. And the title of the article is, From Our Darkest Day, Our Brightest Hope. It's talking about our young people. And then the story is about four sisters, aged 10 to 16. Their father was nearly killed, Lieutenant Colonel Tracy Welch, barely survived the plane that crashed into the Pentagon. And they thought, he was telling the story of my father, they thought their father had been killed in that and how frightened and panicked they were. But it so happened that he had walked to another area of the Pentagon for a meeting that day and his life was spared. And so it's about his four daughters. On September the 12th, these four girls, these sisters, ages 10 to 16, decided to hold a car wash and donate the proceeds to the American Red Cross. They called their effort Wash America, Help Wash Away the Hurt. And those are the signs that they made to get people to stop and get their car washed and give a donation. Wash America, Help Wash Away the Hurt. And they contacted local radio stations to get the word out. And then the sisters set to work with buckets and water. And they raised $10,000 the first day. People were giving so generously. This was September the 12th. And then the idea that they began shot across the entire country like water from a fire hose began to spread. What these four sisters had started and what they were saying, wash America, help wash away the hurt. And last fall, people in 31 states scrubbed cars clean for Wash America. And when the suds were dry, they had raised more than $85,000, these girls and those who joined with them, for the victims and the families. And one of the girls, Aubrey is her name, 15 years old, one of the sisters, said, I never thought kids could change the world, but now I know that when people come together, even average kids like us, you can do anything. And the article goes on, perhaps no group has been more anxious to help with the healing process than young people in America. They were spurred on by President George Bush's call to service and volunteerism and the newly formed USA Freedom Corps. You might have heard about this. New USA Freedom Corps. Record numbers of youth have volunteered to comfort victims of the terrorist attacks and to tackle ongoing problems in America, such as hunger and homelessness, and however they can be of service. You know, and I didn't realize till I reviewed this article that this very weekend that you and I are here together is the 14th annual National Youth Service Day. That's where this weekend, April 26th through 28th. And if you've ever heard George Bush speak about this or heard any news programs about it, you know, one thing that he's hoping that we will do, you know, is Americans will help one another. He's actually espousing biblical principles, isn't he? And the article goes on. People ask whether this generation of young people is up for the challenges that we face. And Steve Culbertson, who is president of Youth Service America and coordinates these programs, says, we have the greatest generation of young Americans ever right under our noses. These youths are volunteering more than any generation in the history of America. You know, we all need to realize that, don't we? If what's happening in America, the change in the attitude of our young people. It's George Barna and his organization literally interviewing 3,000 teenagers across the nation and seeing this wonderful spirit and attitude of young people who are wanting to serve, wanting to be involved, wanting to find God and have a relationship with God, that mosaic generation seeking a true, real experience in a relationship with God. Today, since we're here having a youth weekend, I thought it would be good to have a brief review in my 30 minutes, and that's what Mr. Davis and I planned on, about 30 minutes to get each. Let's take a quick overview and survey, because it always amazes me how often God called and used young people, many of them children in the Bible. Now, sometimes we forget because we just read about the names of them, and we forget that when they first began to respond to God in their lives, they were very young. So let's get an overview of this today and be reminded, and maybe many of you here were called when you were young, I don't know, and maybe you've been in the church most of your life. Well, the truth is, God Almighty is calling you and working with you, and we'll see how young many of His servants were in the Bible. Let's begin in the book of Genesis, chapter 37. Just an overview, a highlight today. Genesis chapter 37. This is the well-known story of Joseph, isn't it? Genesis 37. You remember how old he was when God began to work on his mind and give him, even in this case, dreams. He would dream at night. and he'd have these crazy, wild dreams. And then he would tell them to his brothers, and what happened? They hated him for it, right? It says. But notice in Genesis chapter 37, verse 2. This is the genealogy of Jacob. And Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. Now, the Bible even gives us his age at this point. And then it goes on and tells, you know, Joseph loved him more than his other sons because it says he was the son of his old Jacob's old age. And that created a lot of problems in that family, favoritism toward Joseph. We covered that in the Bible lesson that we went through. At the mistakes that, and God has written this here, that we should never show favoritism toward children. It creates dysfunctional family dynamics and problems within the family, but Joseph, Jacob in this case, did love Joseph more than his other children, and it made him this special coat of many colors. And Joseph dreamed a dream, it says in verse 5, and told his brothers. You know, he was just this naive, innocent teenager, 17 years old, out in the sheep fields with the shepherds, and he comes and blurts out, "Hey, brothers, you want to hear this dream that I had last night? I dreamed I was over all of you." I'm looking to be sure they really liked that, right? No, they didn't. They hated him even more when he told them that. So they became very jealous of Joseph and hated him, and you know the story. And he had another dream and told them all about it, and they hated him even more. And then they plotted to kill him. They hated him so much and were jealous. Remember, they were all unconverted. We're talking about all unconverted people here at this point. Jacob had become converted by now, but not his sons and not Joseph yet. And they were going to kill him. And Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands, verse 21, and said, "No, let's not kill him. Let's not shed his blood." And so they took him and cast him into a pit. And eventually sold him to a caravan, it says in verse 28, of Midianite traders. And they took Joseph to Egypt, it says. So you know the story about Joseph. This is how he ended up in Egypt. But remember here, this teenager and this happening to him, he must have been a little bit confused when he ended up. But it says in chapter 39, when Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites, Midianites and Ishmaelites in that caravan, who had taken him down there. And a key point is verse 2, says the Lord was with Joseph. So we all know that, don't we, now? But I'd just like to remind you, the story of Joseph begins when he's very, very young, when God is working in his life in a special way. You know, we might tend to think that because some of our young people are only in their teens or very young, well, God just isn't working with them yet. No, they're not converted yet. And there's a process, but God is working with them and in their lives. Go to Book of Numbers. Book of Numbers, chapter 14. My wife reminded me of this example today when I was telling her what I was going to speak on. She reminded me, and we're going to look at it here very quickly, that God made the decision to save only the teenagers and those younger of all the children of Israel because of their bad attitudes. Remember when he called them out of Egypt? He's going to lead them through the wilderness. Notice Numbers 14, beginning in verse 29. Actually, pardon me. Numbers 14, beginning in verse 26. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "How long shall I bear with this evil generation who murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings which the children of Israel murmur against me." So the adults were constantly complaining, even after the miracles God had performed. They complained in the wilderness about this and about that. Did you bring us out here to let us die? And we're hungry and we're thirsty. In verse 28, "Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so will I do to you. The carcasses of you who have murmured against me shall fall in this wilderness. All of you who were numbered according to your entire number, from 20 years old and above are going to die in this 40-year wandering in the wilderness. Except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. And they were young men. In other scriptures, it says that they were young men serving Moses. And you by shall no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But notice what God says in verse 31. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. So they weren't teenagers, of course, by the time they entered the promised land. God let all the others die during that period of time. Interesting, isn't it? Is God going to have to start with the next generation of young people in the church to accomplish his will and his purpose? Will I be dead before Christ comes? How many of you here, sitting here, middle-aged, older age, will have gone by now? Every day, some of us die. Just recently, we had one of our senior citizens die just last week, Helen Hummels, 93 years old, one of those faithful, sweet, humble ladies you could ever know. But many of the faithful ones are dying off. Well, brethren, let's not underestimate the power of God. Now, I'm hoping and praying that I will live till Christ comes. That's my desire. It's my hope. It's my plan. It's my goal. I don't know if it'll happen or not. But I thank God that he can take teenagers and other young adults and young people who will listen to God and respond to God and make a commitment to God and begin to seek God, as we'll see these young people did in the Bible that God has worked with in the past. Let's look at men and women. Let's go to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth, because normally as we just read the stories, you know, we're not thinking about how old they may have been. We're just reading about these wonderful examples in the Bible. Ruth, chapter 2. The way I always remember where Ruth is, I remember that Joshua judges Ruth. Yeah, you got it. Some of you did. Find little ways of remembering where some of the books are. Ruth chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. So we all know Ruth is just one of those outstanding examples that God has given us in the Bible. Notice verses 5 and 6. And Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And so the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And generally speaking, when the Bible is talking about a young person or a young man or a young woman, you'll see as we go through many times, they're in their late teens or maybe early 20s. They are young, and many married young back then as well. We'll see a few examples of that later on. But Ruth was a young Moabite woman, probably in her late teens or early 20s. And as you know, God was able to use her, that incredible attitude. We look at Ruth today or think of her today, and many of you women want to be like Ruth today. Notice what she said in verse 16 and 17 of chapter 1, when Naomi said, "Ruth, stay with your people. I'm going back to my land." Her sons had died. But notice what Ruth said to her, "Entreat me not to leave you, Naomi, or to turn back from following you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." And what an incredible attitude for a young woman. An incredible commitment and loyalty. And so God chose Ruth to be one of the four mothers, you know, of King David and Jesus Christ. You see her in their genealogy. Beautiful example of a young, young person. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 3. 1 Samuel chapter 3. He was another very unusual young man. Beginning in verse 1, we'll read through verse 11. The boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli. Samuel's mother had dedicated him and given him to God's service, and to the service of the tabernacle. And the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and there was no widespread revelation. So God was not revealing himself a great deal at that time. And it came to pass at that time, while Eli was lying down in his place, when his eyes had begun to grow so dim that he could not see well, he was getting old and losing his vision. And before the lamp of God went out in the tabernacle of the Lord, where the ark of God was, while Samuel was lying down to sleep, the Lord called Samuel. Now imagine, these are true life events of this young child, Samuel, lying down to sleep and hearing this voice. You know, I mean, that would probably scare most of our young people today. Probably would, because this doesn't happen in the same way today. But they were more God-oriented, and God worked in a especially close way with many of them, and they were aware of that, and they knew when it was God speaking. In this case, Samuel did not yet know who this was, as we shall see, but Eli did. The Lord called Samuel in verse 4, and he answered, Samuel did, here I am. And he ran to Eli and said, thinking that Eli is the one who called him, he said, here I am, for you called me. And Eli said, I did not call you, lie down again. So he went and laid down. And the Lord called yet again, Samuel. Samuel arose and went to Eli, and he said, here I am, you called me. And he answered, I did not call you, my son, go lie down. Verse 7 says, now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor was the word of the Lord yet revealed to him. He didn't yet really know the God of Israel and didn't understand his word, and yet God was working in his life. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time. He did the same thing. He went to Eli and said, why are you calling me? And Eli said, go lie down, son, and if he calls you, verse 7, then this is what you say. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. He had to tell Samuel what to say, how to respond if it happened again. So Samuel went and laid down, and then the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel answered, speak, for your servant hears. And then the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. So God was working with Samuel at a very young age. Notice one verse in verse 19 here, same chapter, verse 19. So Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground, that is, fail. So he became a special young man, a special servant of God, didn't he? So remember that God began working with Samuel at a very young age. You know, sometimes we tend to poo-poo someone who said, a child, or someone very young, who might say, well, I've believed in God all my life. Or I remember when I really made a commitment or a decision for God in my life, you know, not that they were baptized or converted yet in that way, but that, and sometimes I know people have poo-pooed that children can't do that, but they can. And God may have been working in your life and some of your children's lives from the day they existed or were born or conceived. They may not fully understand it yet. Samuel didn't know yet, did he? So some of you teens, most of you, I think, are aware of God and want to know more about God. But even if you don't fully know him, he knows you and understands you and is working in your life. And I think most of you do know and believe that. Let's look at another well-known example, David, 1 Samuel 16, while we're right here. This is such an inspiring example. I hated to miss it, even though it's well-known, because David was so young when God used him in this awesome way. Here was this young man, and some commentaries say he may have been as young as 14 years old when Goliath came along in this story. Let's read about it. 1 Samuel 16, beginning in verse 10. Jesse made 7 of his sons pass before Samuel, because God said he was going to choose, you know, they wanted a king, and God was involved in helping them. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. You know, Samuel, Jesse made his 7 sons, and they were the oldest, passed before Samuel. In verse 11, Samuel said to Jesse, are these all of your sons, these young men here? And he said, but there remains yet the youngest. See, they were all young men. David was the youngest of all. And Jesse, his father, said, well, he's out keeping the sheep. Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes. And so he sent and brought him in, and he was ruddy, reddish in complexion, with bright eyes, and good looking. Yeah, so teenagers can be good looking. I think Mr. Davis was asking about that. David's a young teenager here. And the Lord said, arise and anoint him. This is the one. Let's try to imagine that. You know, the older sons, who knows what ages, maybe older teens, early 20s, 6, 7 of them. Nope, they're not the ones. Go get the youngest one. It's David. And God says to Samuel, he's the one. This is the one. And he was anointed to become the next king of Israel. And he was probably 14 years old. But that's not absolute. But he was certainly a very young teen. But the astounding thing, let's notice verses 32 and 33, this incident with Goliath. And David said to Saul, who was the present king at that time, and who was failing and not obeying God, and God had made the decision to replace him. Saul later would become very jealous of David and even try to kill him. But not at this point. So here's David, a young boy. He said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go fight this Philistine. You're but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. And David went on to tell him what he did. I mean, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took one of the lambs, I went out after it. Look at verse 35. An incredible young man. He may have been young, but he was brave and had a lot of courage. And as we shall see, as a young man, he had great faith in God. Notice verse 42. Verse 42. When the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. You can imagine the look on Goliath. How tall was Goliath? Was it something 9 feet tall, if I remember right? 10 feet tall? I forget exactly what it was. But he was taller than the basketball players today he'd be looking down at the basket, dropping it in, right? Way down. And he looked upon David and disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So he saw this young kid out there challenging him. What an awesome story, one we're familiar with. But we must never forget, David wasn't this man in his 20s or 30s. He was a young teenager. And God had called him, and he had a relationship with God. So what an awesome story. Let's go on to another one. Second Chronicles. Chapter 34. Second Chronicles, chapter 34. I want to encourage you young people today, no matter what your situation or problems or how you feel about yourself, to realize that God is involved in your life. And I've been very encouraged at our summer camps. My wife and I have enjoyed being at them because we've seen these incredible... I take hope for the future, for the Church of God, not only for those of you, you know, today is Youth Day, so I'm not saying those of you who are middle-aged or older, you don't count, right? That's not what we're saying. This is Youth Weekend. And so we're putting the emphasis today on how special and important youth have always been and are to God, as well as those of us who are older and committed to God completely. But notice the example of Josiah, 2 Chronicles chapter 34. He again was an incredible, unique young man, very rare, because most of the kings of Israel and Judah were not good kings. But notice this, Josiah was 8 years old. Now, of course, he obviously, when you were that young, you had adults who tutored you and trained you and guided you in your duties. He was 8 years old when he became king. But notice he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, so he would have been 16 years old at this point, while he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. So it kind of tells us, doesn't it, somewhere in those mid-teens, a teenager can become very sincere and serious about God. I'm not saying they can't earlier, because some children do earlier. But I see these ages mentioned in the Bible, that he began to seek the God of his father David when he was 16 years old. And he became very zealous, and he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high places where they sacrificed to pagan gods. Got rid of the wooden images and the carved images and the molded images. So imagine this zealous teenager, 16 years old, who was king, seeking God and reading the Bible and saying, we're going to get rid of these things, these pagan idols and these pagan gods. So Josiah was quite a young man, and God used him as a good king. But ladies, let's go to another woman. I may not turn to every one of these examples, but what about Esther? Many of you know the story of Esther well, and how she was in a foreign land, and she was taken by this Gentile king because he was looking for a new queen, and he wanted the young virgins of the land, and he wanted the best to choose from to choose a new queen as his wife. And it says of Esther in the book of Esther chapter 2 that Esther was young, and again she probably was maybe in her late teens, at the most in her early 20s, when he wanted her as his queen, as his new queen. You might say, what an honor. Well, not necessarily with this Gentile king. But Esther did it. And God had a hand in her life, didn't he? You know the story of Esther, that God was able to use this young woman to save his people, the Jews, to go before the king, when you never went before the king unless he called you to come. If you dare come to the king before he asked you to come, it was death. And so you know Haman and his plot, and he wanted to have all the Jews killed and butchered, and the story of Esther. But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, if we lined all these people up, if we could see them today or picture them here, we would say, oh, I didn't realize they looked so young when God began this or was doing this in their life. A bunch of kids. A bunch of young people. Yep, that's the way it began in many, many of these people's lives. Very young. Let's move to the New Testament as we wrap it up. And again, this is just a quick overview, so that we this weekend can be thankful for all of our young people. Thank God for them. Despite what you might think, oh, my children, they're not converted yet. Well, neither were you at one time, neither was I at one time, but they will be if they're not. And without going to the book of Luke, I will just tell you a little bit about Mary, the mother of Jesus. How young do you think she was? I would just want to read from the Revell Bible Dictionary under Mary. It says, Mary was likely very young when she was betrothed to Joseph. In that culture, an older man might pledge to marry an underage girl, but not consummate the marriage until she reached maturity. In such a case, the girl might even live in his home, and in the case of Joseph, accompany him on his journey to Bethlehem, although she was at that time only pledged to marry him, betrothed, says in the King James, pledged, only pledged to marry him. If such a girl was found pregnant, the future husband might demand return of the bridal price and quote-unquote divorce her, returning her to her family. And the text of Luke is most illuminating concerning Mary's faith and character at a very young age. It portrays Mary's courage as she expresses her willingness to bear the Son of the Most High when it is revealed to her by angels. Even though she knew her pregnancy would surely be misunderstood and would put her future marriage to Joseph at risk. So Mary, the Bible dictionaries and all say, was a very young girl. But she obviously was a very mature young girl and a faith in God, committed to God. I don't know exactly. No one probably knows exactly how old she was. They don't say. But they just say she was probably very young. So imagine that. God choosing a beautiful young girl like Mary, a virgin, to bear the Son of God, Jesus Christ, on this earth. And what it would have taken to be like Mary, to accept this and to just trust God with your life. So that's quite an awesome example, isn't it? So you see in these scriptures, men and women, many of them very young, probably in their teens. Let's look at one more. Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Verses 14 and 15. 2 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 14. Paul writing to Timothy, he says, "As for you, continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation." So Timothy had been taught the scriptures by his mother and by his grandmother. Other scriptures point out, even giving the name of his mother and grandmother, his grandmother Lois and his mother Eunice, it says in 2 Timothy 1:5. So the Bible, because of their influence in Timothy's life, that from a very young age, Timothy learned the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures, and became a young man of faith in God. And the Apostle Paul came along, and Timothy wanted to follow him and be his disciple. And he took him under his wing, and he became like a son to him. And he trained him. And Timothy, this young man, became a very young minister. So young, notice 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. I think you all probably remember this scripture, what Paul had to write to Timothy to encourage him. Because probably a lot of people looked at Timothy and said, "Him? A minister?" Notice 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. Where Paul said to Timothy, "Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy," that is, being revealed by God through those ministers who ordained him, "with the laying on of hands of the presbytery." Let's see, I'm looking for the part that says, verse 12. Yeah, I missed that one, didn't I? Verse 12 says, "Let no one despise your youth." Now, why did he say that? Because some people in the church were despising how young Timothy was. He's too young to be a minister or a servant of God. But he really wasn't, was he? And he developed into a fine minister of God. You know, I just announced today a new program beginning in the United Church of God of seeking. And we'll use prayer and fasting, and we'll let God reveal by the fruits in the lives of individuals. But once again, just like back in the days of Ambassador College, some of us would go there. And, it was never my desire or goal in life. I didn't choose to be a minister. I'm glad it's a calling from God. Somebody else said, "Well, give it a try." And the Ambassador College prepared the way. But the point is that God will begin doing the same thing again with young men and young women, and maybe middle-aged men and middle-aged women as well. But we certainly need more young men and women in the ministry in the United Church of God who have that youthful zeal and enthusiasm and the energy and the drive to get in there and get things done once again, like I used to have when I was young. I'm doing my best, but I sure know that we do need new, youthful, dynamic, energetic ministers and wives in the United Church of God, men and women that God has probably been working with and for a long, long time. Let's close with one final scripture. It's a prophecy of the end time that shows that God is going to continue to call and work with his young people. Acts chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. And it shall come to pass in the last days, says God, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. So we know there's coming a time in the future of great spiritual power that will be poured out to this church, to God's church and God's people, to those who are remaining faithful to God, who are fighting that good fight of faith and have a relationship with God, or persevering in the faith and never giving up. God knows who they are. And he says he's going to pour out his spirit in all flesh. Notice he says, your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Maybe given special dreams again, or visions, or inspiration, like in the old times. And how would we believe them? You know, who would you believe? Well, I wouldn't believe somebody that, let's say, they've just been out doing their own thing. You know what I mean? I would tend to believe somebody who's been a loyal, faithful, staunch, humble servant in the church somewhere. They've been faithful to God. They've continued obeying God, keeping his commandments, despite all that's happened in the church. They haven't given up on that. And they've become somewhere as a part of the Church of God, service-oriented, that their heart and attitude is love for people, and they want to serve wherever they can. Somebody like that, I would believe. But if it's somebody in the church who's been big ego, just jumping around, they're not interested in serving or settling down and becoming a part of anything. They want to be independent and do what they want to do. Now, I shouldn't have used that word. That might reflect negatively on some who are independent. I'm not trying to do that, because only God knows who his true people are. But my point is, God does know. And someday, this prophecy is going to come to pass. And God is going to give young men and women visions and dreams. And in verse 18, he says, on my men servants and on my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they shall prophesy. They will be inspired by God in whatever way he chooses. This is yet to be fulfilled, brethren. So we better be preparing for that. So as we enjoy this weekend and we look at our young people on the dance floor tonight, maybe some of us joining them, and at the games that we're going to have tomorrow, keep this in mind. These are God's young people.